Ralph Volstead, discussing the physiology of the heart and the pathology of heart disease. The things on the alternating days will be on, you know, what are the problems that we have as growing old, as far as what are we going to live, what are we going to do?
What are we going to live on? How are we going to talk to each other and other people? What are we going to do? Just kind of the ordinary things of our lives.
How many of you people have had heart disease? Nobody here? Man, I was off. You're a remarkable group. What? Anybody else have angina, high blood pressure?
High blood pressure.
Okay.
Low blood pressure.
Low blood pressure.
Okay. My aorta wasn't acting like an aorta, so I had a replacement.
Okay, a very important part, hardening of the arteries, etc. I'd like to read, we thought we'd have a little fun with the titles of our talk, so we remembered the 12th chapter of Ecclesiastes. Any of you remember the last chapter, what it was talking about? There's a famous hymn that's taken from that was in the way, not in the Concordia, but the old Concordia, the old Concordia. Most of us would remember that, maybe, if we used it in Sunday school when we were kids. Remember what the poem is? Well, you'll probably remember it after I read this. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw nigh, when you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men are bent and the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows are few and are dimmed, and the doors on the street are shut, when the sound of the grinding is low and one rises up at the voice of a bird. I don't know, how many of you get up early in the mornings now? Yeah, I do myself. And all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also what is high, and terrors are in the way, and coronary heart disease, and what have you. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along, and desire fails, because man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. And here comes the title. Before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken at the well, or the wheel broken at the cistern, and the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. A real happy view of God. What we're going to talk about. But what I found with working with my patients, and Rosemary too, with the patient she's worked, she's a social worker, is that if we know a little bit about how our body works, what the diseases are like, it isn't anywhere near as scary. Now, we're going to die just as fast if we know about it. Maybe we'll be able to take care of some of these things, but we're not going to be as frightened of it as it says in the good book. I think it's one of the best pieces of psychology one can have, is to learn a little bit about how your body works. It's an instrument, it's a machine that most of us are interested in. The heart can be thought of as two pumps. There's the right and the left part of the heart. This is more of what the heart actually looks like. I didn't put in all the tubes over here, but that's from the outside. But it works as though it were just two straight pumps, like you'd have two bicycle pumps if you'd want. There is the right and the left side, and in a way they work separately. Blood comes in to the right heart, and you have to have a valve here. You can get in trouble with the valves if the valves won't close, right, or if they open too far. Either one of them is going to give you trouble. They're too stiff. You can see how that would really mess up the works. So that's one of the problems. Comes in here, then this is the right side of the, it comes from the body. It's hard to pick out a place to start because it's a circle. It's pushed down into the lungs, comes over, goes to the left side of the heart, which is another pump, then goes through two very important valves, which can give you a lot of trouble if they're not working right. In fact, you can put in a mechanical valve, a little ping pong ball, in fact, in the aorta. This would be the aorta going out here, which goes to all the head, the limbs, and all the organs. So you see there are two parts, and yet the blood goes through there in a circle. It breaks down and becomes a very tiny capillaries. They come together again, like a tree branching out, but then you go the reverse of a tree back here. And when you know that this is a circle, that the all the arteries and the veins break down into smaller and smaller and in the capillaries and come back again, then you will know, you now know more than people knew until 1600 and something. Do you, any of you remember the doctor who developed this idea? Dr. Harvey? Dr. Harvey discovered it, or proved it, I suppose. I imagine somebody had thought of it before, but he was the one that really figured out that it would go around and stay in one circle. Wouldn't leave from there now. Any questions at this time that you can...
Where does it get purified?
Okay, that's one of the very important parts. When it gets down to the lungs, it breaks down real fine to where the air and the liquid of the blood are in very close contact. The wall between them is very, very thin. And the carbon dioxide, that's what we burn. We burn sugar. And that's an interesting thing to remember, that when we say sugar is so bad for us, remember that that's exactly what we live on. Not necessarily ice cream, but... the carbon dioxide gets off here, and the oxygen comes in here in the lungs. What about the... what else? Where else do we get rid of poisons?
Liver.
Okay. In the organs, you have two in particular, and you've named them both. The kidneys, where you have the nitrogen that's broken down. When you break down your proteins, you end up with a lot of nitrogen compounds, and they have to be thrown out in the kidneys. And the liver, what is broken down the liver, do you know? It's a little bit more difficult to most of us wouldn't be expected to know that, but the fat has changed. A lot of the chemistry that goes on in the liver. It's just a big chemical factory. It changes the, builds up sugar, stores sugar, throws out cholesterol, which you're going to need a lot in your arteries. I mean, you need to know about it so you don't have it in your arteries. In general, and then it throws some of it out in the bile, some of it back out in the blood, and so forth. It's a big chemical factory. What happens if... Well, first of all, what's the pressure, ordinary pressure in this side, over here in the body side, you know? What's the pressure in the arteries? That's your blood pressure ordinarily, and what do you remember?
120?
120 over
80.
And that's just a ballpark figure. That's a nice one to have. The lower this goes, the better, until all. There are problems. If you have problems with your valves, this may, if, let's see, this valve, or this one, either one of them are more close, right? Whether this determines what the pressure is when the lower side of it pumps out like this, and you can imagine when it squirts out, the pressure is up, and when it comes back, well, the pressure slides down. And if this valve was all off, this would go clear down to zero sometimes, and that isn't good. But in general, the lower the pressure, the better off you are. That's in general. Didn't we hear a lecture on that this morning at 9 o'clock? That in general, like Proverbs meant, in general, not this exact. Okay, any other questions about, or what would happen if this valve or this pump didn't work? What would happen to the blood down here? Would it get back? Oh, obviously, if this were plugged up or if this wouldn't pump properly, then the pressure would rise in here. What would happen to the veins? Well, yeah, because these are the veins going up to it, and the pressure here would keep the blood here would be kept pushing through all your organs and your legs and muscles. But couldn't get out here, so when ordinarily this pressure is 120, we'll say, and this pressure ordinarily is, well, this is a mercury, and this is a water, so that's 1 or 2 millimeters of mercury. In order to get it through there, it has to raise the pressure a great deal. What do you think would happen as far as the capillaries are concerned if you raise the pressure in the capillaries? They start to leak. If you have a, what happens to your hose as you get an old leaky hose and you open the valve at the end, the pressure, the water runs through and nothing, the hose is fine, but you close that nozzle off at the end, what happens to the water? Where does it go? Leaks all over. Well, that's what happens to your capillaries. And when water leaks out, you start getting edema of your legs, for instance, or sometimes even of your arms and so on. So, and if this one does, this one gives up, doesn't close as well, doesn't work as hard, these two don't work together, then the pressure will rise here, and you will get edema, you'll get water going out here, and you end up with water in the lung, or edema of the lung, which, if it comes suddenly, can be a very life-threatening kind of thing. Otherwise, if it's chronic, you can have a lot of cough. It's called cardiac asthma. It bleeds a little because this blood is under high pressure in here. And you get a little rusty sputum and so on. So that's sort of the mechanics of it. Now, how about any questions at this point?
What happens when you have a heart murmur? Because people, you know, often say, oh, I was always told I had a heart murmur when I was a child, and I still have it.
Any of you had heart murmur? Okay. Do you still have it?
It doesn't bother me, but they tell me I have it.
Uh-huh. And was it still?
I grew out of it.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of different reasons for heart murmurs. Usually you don't hear any squirting, any whistles in between the thump, thump, thump of your heart. If you ever put your ear on your spouse's chest, listen to their heart, you would hear it go thump, lub-dub, lub-dub, lub-dub. We weren't allowed to say thump, thump, because there are two parts of it, lub-dub. If this gets narrowed at all, for instance, which it often does with rheumatic fever, which we don't very seldom have anymore. You know why?
Penicillin.
Right. We used to get it from bacteria, strep throat was the most common thing. You had a bad strep throat, syphilis, any number of infections with beta strep, and then maybe 2 to 6 weeks later you'd come down with kidney disease, or you'd start getting scars on the valve. It would tighten down a little, then the blood would have to squirt through a small opening. And going through the small opening, you could hear that squirt go through. It wasn't a smooth flow. Does that make sense? A minor murmur would be just a slight bit of problem with the valve. You know, not a great deal. That's probably what happened, you know, something on that order. You can have another thing. So in some hearts, in the chamber, and of course there isn't a piston that goes, what the heart does is squeeze. And if you had a cross in here, a little piece of what they call cordi tendini, they're a little cord across there, they'd be just like you remember, you who have been in the Midwest, and when the thermometer drops to 30 below and the wind is blowing, and the you remember the humming of the weather stripping, and a number of different things in the house evidently will hum because you'll hear that. The same thing happens here. A little of your weather stripping gets in the way of the blood, and it means nothing at all. It scares people, because sometimes that can be very loud. But in that particular case, it wouldn't mean anything. So a murmur means that something is a band, a valve, something is in the wind, vibrating in the wind.
Well, now, if there's a hole in the heart,
Will that also cause a murmur, the murmur to be louder than at first?
Okay, if you have a, oh, man, I got too much on here already, don't I? It's not an apple, it's the heart. Supposing you have, in fact, when in utero, before you're born, in the womb, you can't breathe no oxygen. You get oxygen through the blood, not through the mother's blood, from the mother's blood to the placenta to you. So you have there's an opening there early, and then there is another opening between these two, so that you bypass a lot of the lung. The heart doesn't have to work so hard to keep pushing all this blood through the lung because it's not doing anything for the lung. When you're born, or before you're born, this one closes. And after you're born, it takes 2-3 days, and that one won't close. If there's a little bit left open there, you can imagine that you'd hear some noise of the blood rushing through that. If this one is left open, and these can be caused by diseases during pregnancy, for instance, the rubella during pregnancy, then you'll have a lot of noise going through that little opening. I'm sure it's clear as mud, but anything further? Any other questions on the mechanics of the heart?
Well, we had a neighbor girl that when she went to the UO, she had a physical, and they told her she had a hole in her heart the size of a 50 cent piece, and she had a 50-50 chance of surviving. But they told her if she didn't have it done and had children, it might be fatal. So she took the risk and got over it. And she said, I never knew what it was to eat a meal and not feel tired afterwards. And she just thought it was so beautiful that she dedicated her life to Christian work because she thought the Lord, too, had healed her.
Mm-hmm.
But I never did quite understand where that hole was.
Well, it is sort of funny to have a hole in the heart. You expect the blood to go all over, wouldn't you? But actually, it's between these two parts of the heart, you see, if you have a hole in the heart. If that, or this connection up here could also be there, but it was probably actually the hole in the heart.
Well, my little girl's was on the left ventricle.
Mm-hmm. It has to be, it could be between the, it's in the this chamber.
But she developed tremor, and unless that it had to be just absolutely done immediately, they said to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as she grew older, and I'd have to rush her to the hospital, they would go through all the series of what else could ail her and what was her trouble, and they wouldn't listen to me. And I would have to pound her on her back, and then she'd expel blood from her lump, and then she'd be all right again for a while, see? And they would pay no attention to that until she had her surgery.
And then did the surgery cure it then?
It cured it pretty well.
Yes?
I have a pacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Baber in California from the Eisenhower Clinic, I shared some time with Indio Hospital, and the question I have, without going to a long story about it, but instead of having two wires coming from the pacemaker down to the heart, he said it was too strong. So he took out one wire, and I'm just having the one wire. And being checked on every 3 months by telecare. Telephone to the Don Gallagher, who knows the operation of the pacemaker. And only once a year with Dr. Nagel, a specialist. I'm under no restrictions whatsoever. But he called,
Are you allowed to fight as much as you wanted with your wife?
Not problem, no problem that way. But he called that, he said I had what you call a walk-through heart. That's why I needed help.
What's a walk-through heart? That's one I haven't heard, frankly. Quite obviously, I'm not a cardiologist, I'm a psychiatrist, but I spent 20 years as a general practitioner, so I'm interested in getting these ideas to us all. I really don't know what a walk-through heart is. Do any of the rest of you have a pacemaker? We're a remarkably healthy group. I'm not kidding you.
He never even passed out.
What does a pacemaker do? Why do they put them in?
Very good. I was just waiting for you to say that. I didn't think you'd ever get it.
Like a little shot in the arm.
That's exactly it. Or you get a shot in the heart. So you have a stimulator, and it's not quite as powerful as, what do you call these things you control the animals with?
Prod,
yeah. But it prods the heart. You see, the heart is made up of a whole bunch of, I think of them as strings, of muscle. They all go together as one. And each one of them can contract separately. If they do, of course, your heart goes like this without contracting at all. I mean, each one can contract and relax. One contracts while the other is relaxing and you don't get any words. It's like people on a team. They all have to pull at the same time. They need to work together. What the stimulus does, and you need only one wire to go to the heart, and the other one, if you remember from your electricity, you always have to have a circuit. But if the other one is into the body, any place, then there'll go a circuit through there. And ordinarily you have an area in your heart, up in here someplace. It's called a pacemaker. The farther up you go in the muscles here, the faster they contract. In this one spot, it contracts the fastest and pulls all the rest of the fibers of the heart along with it. The contraction spreads over, but it contracts together and squirts the blood out because it is all able to contract together. If there is a break, there is a sort of a nerve bundle that goes from the top, these are the auricles, down to the ventricles, and this bundle is called the bundle of His. I'm sure you're very interested in that name. But anyhow, if that bundle doesn't work right, it might be because of hardening of the arteries that are in this area, and this probably happened to mine, then the heart up here and the part down here don't work together. By putting in this stimulator, you're able to start the heart vibrating or contracting together again. So that's the point of the